Okay, everybody, we here at Amazing Marketing Limited have been tasked with coming up with a name for the third car in the INEOS range. Now, remember, it has to be something military, British, and works alongside Grenadier and their next car, the Fusilier.
Well, staying with the militaristic theme, how about Voltigeur?
Oh, where does that come from?
It was the light infantry in Napoleon's army.
No, that's too French.
Okay, how about Carabinier?
No, too Italian.
Musketeer?
No, French again.
Buccaneer?
No, it's too close to a swear word.
Diarrhea?
Absolutely not.
Okay, how about Glimmerier?
Oh, that's interesting. What does that mean?
It means soft, dreamy, magic user or illusionist.
Oh, do you know what? That's perfect. Because quite frankly, INEOS Automotive will go bust long before they've ever have three cars in their range. Oh, by the way, have we been paid?
No, not for the last 6 weeks anyway. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Zog.
Hello.
And once again, there is an interminable delay between me hearing your voice and Zog's face actually doing it. But that will not affect the programme. We will just be very professional and allow each other no overlaps. Hello, Mucker, how are you? Over.
Hey, not bad, not bad. Over.
Glad to hear it. Over.
Yeah, now your picture is a bit out of sync, but you're coming through loud and clear.
Honestly, I love technology. Listen, do you know what? We live in difficult times, right? I've had a difficult week. Went to a old friend's funeral in the week, which was sad and happy. Oh, she was 91, yeah. Right? So complaints. All right, it was one of those big emotional weeks. Mum of a member of the On Speed band, Steve Allen Jones. His mum, Brenda, who was my biggest fan. And when I came out to the funeral, having turned my phone off for the funeral, because what always happens is you turn up for an event like this and you've got your phone, you think you turned it off, but it gives you a reminder that you got to be at a friend's funeral, which bleeps at the funeral. So I avoided that by turning my phone off. Then when I turned my phone back on after the funeral, it would no longer read my SIM card, and I was now cut off from the entire universe. And so it's taken me 3 days to port everything over to a new phone. I'm not complaining, Zog.
I was going to say, you know, there can be an upside to being cut off from the rest of humanity for a little while, taking a little break. It could be very healthy.
Yeah, I should have just gone with it for a little while and not raced to get back in touch with the whole universe. But hey, I was marooned in Rill at the time. There's an album.
Well, you have to catch up at some point.
Yeah. Hey, but all good. And then there's a reason for this. I'm saying it's been a complicated week. It was also a beautiful week because I went over to Ireland. And I chose not to drive east to Liverpool and fly over my house to Dublin. I chose to drive west to Ynysmon, the Isle of Anglesey, to Holyhead. And I got a ferry over without a car. I left my car in Holyhead and as a foot passenger, I went to fantastic Dublin. And I haven't been there forever. And it was marvellous. And do you know why it was marvellous, Doug? Because I was in Europe again.
Ah, very well. I saw you tweeted a picture of you with a statue of Phil Lynott.
Yeah.
Which obviously meant something to you. And I won't go into the story, but a colleague of mine years ago recounted how they'd, as a kid, been to a Phil Lynott gig and had an interaction with Phil Lynott that certainly made you feel, you know, that he was a really solid sound chap and not the kind of star who was a little bit above themselves, you know.
True.
Yeah, he was a good chap by all accounts.
True.
And wrote some great songs, you know. Yellow Pearl, great record. They are possibly definitely in the top three Top of the Pops theme tunes of all time.
Hey, Midgeur was in two bands with Phil Lynott because he was in Thin Lizzy briefly, wasn't he? And he recorded that Yellow Pearl Top of the Pops theme tune. I mean, I loved him. I only met him three times, all in 1985, the last year of his life. And he was incredible with me. He was so honest with me. And the reason I went to Dublin was I went to Dublin. You got to say Dublin like that, right? We've been to Dublin. And the reason I went to Dublin was that the guy who was playing Philip Lynott in a play called Moonlight, the Philip Lynott Enigma. The actor's name is Peter M. Smith. He's from Dublin. He grew up in the same part of Dublin as Phil Lynott. He has Phil's voice. He has Phil's look. He can sing like Phil. And it's a play with music, and it's introduced by Eric Bell, who is the original guitarist in Thin Lizzy. Hmm. And it's authentic. And they paint Phil Lynott out as two things: a very ordinary man, a very special man. And he's special because the play takes place, spoilers I'm afraid, kind of in heaven, or a poet's heaven, where Phil Lynott spends most of the time in conversation with great Irish playwright Brendan Behan. And yeah, it's describing Philip as a poet, and I loved him. And the reason I went was the actor who's playing him got in touch to say he's been watching my interviews with Phil Lynott that I did back in the 80s on YouTube, and he's learnt more about Philip Lynott than in any other interview from the way he interacts with me. And I can't believe that. I think that's an incredible thing to say. Fantastic. But I did remember noting how extraordinarily brilliant he was with me. And I'm a big fan, right? Love the music, love the man, love the show. But in Ireland, right, sorry, I got a bit intense there. I had to explain that. But in Ireland, right, you're in Europe. You don't see Vauxhalls anymore. There are Opals everywhere. Of course. That was lovely. Yeah. And they're all right on drive, but they've got kilometres. And because of that, Ireland has always done well with something that I'm, you know, passionate about, the Japanese domestic market car. My Sora and my Cappuccino are both JDM versions of those cars, right? And in Ireland, they make perfect sense because they're right-hand drive and the speedo reads in kilometres. In the Republic of Ireland.
Yes, perfect. Of course, yes, you've got the perfect, yeah.
So on the streets of Dublin, I nearly put my neck out. It was on Grafton Street, I can't remember. But I saw, I think, about a 1978 Nissan Skyline. It was, I think they call it the C210 2000 GTEX. Oh, yeah. Proper old school. Edges. You know the way that Hyundai, how do we say it now? Like Monday. Hyundai.
I still say Hyundai.
Yeah, well, you say tomato, I say potato. Yeah, the way that Hyundai, I have to really think about it, have gone for the 70s edge, they've brought the 70s edge back. You know, they're evoking their early Pony, which was like 80s, late 70s. But there it was, first generation real thing. It looked like it could slice cheese, this car. It was just gorgeous. I stood and applauded as it went past the guy driving it, smiled at me. I love Dublin, love Dublin. But hey, a lot of BYDs in Dublin too, Zogger.
Oh, rising star, yeah. Particularly with Tesla's image problems at the moment and declining fortunes. Yeah, BYD are reaping some benefit from that. I mean, apart from that, they're, you know, on merit.
Yeah.
Selling a lot more vehicles and getting, yeah.
Yeah, I saw a seal today here in Conwy. That's not unusual. We have seals off the coast here. But I saw a BYD seal today as I was walking down the hill, and it looked very polished. It looked, you know, tight and tidy and well built. And interesting, they're putting some effort into that car. They're the biggest selling electric car brand on the planet at the moment. Did you know that, BYD?
Really? I did not know that. Wowza.
And do you know why they're called BYD?
If I did read this, I can't recall. Bring your own diesel. No, come on.
Very good. Who needs AI when we've got Z? Yeah, it's at the moment, it stands for Build Your Dream.
Huh.
It's a kind of spiritual idea. But that's been templated over the original choice of just three letters which worked in the same way as BMW. they knew if they had to come up with a brand, it didn't actually stand for anything at all. It was just chose those three characters, yeah. if you like, BYD. It's a bit like BMW. But now, fair play. They've made great leaps and bounds, and they have a presence in the world. We car people know about them. And I'm guessing that punters are buying them too, because they, as you say, avoid all the hang-ups that come with Tesla, and in many cases are better bits of technology. They certainly look better built, I'd say.
Yeah, no, they're getting. I'm seeing a lot more people, you know, commenting favourably on a first-hand impression they've had of checking out a BYD. And but yeah, the build your dream. That's interesting. I mean, it's an odd kind of name. It's hard to think of another car brand that has a name that sort of, you know, expresses an intention or an emotion or something like that, rather than being, you know, the name of a person, a place, or something, you know, something more sort of concrete and real world, something rather than something in the realm of the imagination, if you know what I mean. It's an interesting, it's an odd bit of branding.
BMW stands for Bayern Motorwerk.
Yes, exactly.
Bavarian car manufacturers, Bavarian car, I think, Bavarian in other words.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mercedes was a daughter's name, wasn't it?
Exactly. Rolls-Royce, the names of two founders. Porsche, name of a founder.
Yeah.
Volkswagen, car of the people, people's car.
Mini, named after Minnie Riperton, the very high singing, beautiful.
Via a time machine. That was quite a neat trick. I was very impressed with the way they did that.
But you're right, to actually mean something. There's a precedent for it outside of the world of cars, in that LG is said to stand for life's good.
Mm.
But that, again, I understand was templated over the two initials LG, which I don't know why they were chosen, what they stood for originally. That's the only other one I can think of.
I mean, to me, it seems there's a clear advantage in having a name that is, you know, just a set of initials, LG, BMW, BYD, in that you have something that doesn't, you have something that is never going to offend anybody. You know, it's not going to be a word or a thing that can ever be baffling or weird to somebody. It's always just a little bit abstract, and you know, you don't know quite what it means, but that's okay. That's the brand. You're not necessarily reading anything into it. And that neutrality can be a very positive thing in a global marketplace.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to earn your brand, haven't you? You can come up with anything, but then you've got to be able to define what that means. You've got to back it up with something. I mean, in rock and roll, there are precedents. You know, who would call a band The Police? You know, these days, if you're doing a search for The Police, oh, you'd have to spell it uniquely to make it identifiable. Who'd call a band U2, right? Wasn't that a spy plane? You know, it's very important when you create a brand, you build an association to something without it actually being that thing. That's why you get all these incredible Chinese names like Great Runner, or the Japanese do it too, don't they? It's sort of Land Cruiser, not Land Rover, you know, associated but not the same.
I guess, yeah. Although on that name thing, I suppose maybe that's why I named Blackpink for the Korean band. That has, being a, you know, a made up or a, you know, or stuck together word, you know, compound word, that's going to be, you know, original but also recognizable. Yeah, I guess that fits that.
That becomes theirs.
Fits that pattern you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like me, I write whiz bang with a capital B in the middle. It's all one word, but whiz bang has a capital B. It's stylized that way. Mini is stylized always in uppercase.
Yeah,
you know that, don't you? It's never capital M and lowercase. It's always stylized that. Hey, way away from the world of Formula One that I was intending to talk to you about. Hey, got to talk about women in space, though, too. Should we put off the Formula One and talk about women in space for a second?
Oh, God, okay, yeah, quick discussion of the new... is it New Glenn or New Shepard?
Shepard.
Brain seizure. It's New Shepard.
New Shepard suborbital lobs. Just like Alan Shepard did a suborbital lob 15 minutes in his pioneering flight at the top of that Redstone.
Right.
And then the New Glenn is going to be able to get us to orbit.
That's right. Okay, thank you.
I'm all for space tourism. I'm all for ease of access to space. I'm all for anyone developing a new launch system that's going to open up space, right? I'm a Star Trek fan. I will accept anybody on the table doing that. And I see it a bit like the days of early barnstorming, where only really, really wealthy people could afford to fly. And then ultimately, everyone could afford to fly. And it's happening with space stuff now. These really wealthy people are actually paving the way for the rest of us to have access to space. But has there ever been a more vacuous space mission ever than Katy Perry and a bunch of other people? I've honestly no idea who they were, genuinely don't know, going to the edge of space.
Okay, well, okay, now I've got to push back against this because I kind of don't like the negativity of this. There's been a lot of negativity about that flight. And no, sure, you could absolutely, at the same time, you know, we're both fans of space generally and space tourism. Has there ever been anything more vacuous than this? Yeah, probably a great many of the other space tourism flights that have taken place.
Uh-huh.
What is more pointless and offensive and vacuous than using huge amounts of resources to send very rich people into space just because they can afford it and they fancy doing it? What is the benefit of that ever, full stop? Yeah, we happen to quite like it because we love the idea of going to space and we like the bigger picture. But to get your particular point, no, I think it's very unfair to say that this is more vacuous than any other space tourist flight.
Yeah.
You know, that symbolic value of being an all-female flight, what's wrong with that? Why object to that?
I don't object to that.
Is that something you want to object to? I don't object to it at all. And I love Katy Perry. So Katy Perry in space, two thumbs up.
I was disappointed because Katy Perry likes a bit of cosplay. She missed a trick. She could have dressed as Barbarella or one of the moon base women from UFO, purple wig, silver spacesuit.
That was a look. Yeah, that was certainly a look.
It might have got my attention in a different way. No, I'm being unfair. No, women in space, fantastic, fantastic. One of my favourite women ever to go into space was the first ever British astronaut, Helen Sharman.
Helen Sharman, yeah.
She went up there and talked in great detail and was a proper astronaut. She was, yes, a passenger on board a Soyuz spacecraft, as were Katy Perry and these other people in the New Shepard. You know, it's a fairground ride, but to be fair, Britain's first astronaut, and it wasn't Tim Peake or Michael Fole, Helen Sharman went up and spent, I think, 8 days in Mir as a fare-paying passenger and as part of, I think it's called Intercosmos, which is a Russian program to fly people from every other nation on the planet as a guest. And she was amazing. She brought a kind of an intelligence, an emotional intelligence to reporting what it was like to go and be in free fall and, you know, in microgravity for a week. I only caught the reruns. I missed the whole Katy Perry thing, right? But as I came in, they were coming back and the chutes opened and everyone screamed, the drogue chutes, and then the main chutes opened and everyone screamed again, and then the landing, everyone just screamed. All I was getting was screams, and it, my view, it told you what this is. It's a fairground ride. It's exciting.
Going to space is exciting.
And we're used to Top Gun's doing it.
Yeah, it's absolutely fairground ride. That's a very good comparison, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good comparison. Yeah, it's the best fairground ride ever.
I'd do it tomorrow.
Best roller coaster ride ever. One thing that struck me as quite weird about it was I saw quite a few social media posts along the lines of, who are they trying to kid with this ridiculous CGI? Astronauts don't go into space without helmets or something. I mean, you know, honestly, you know, the ignorance, the boneheadedness of this.
It's heartbreaking, Chuck.
It is heartbreaking, the ignorance of it, because, I mean, you know, astronauts have mostly worn helmets during launches, but not because they need the helmet. They wear them because they need the helmet if there's an emergency and the cabin depressurizes and, you know, you're not going to have time to reach for your spacesuit and your helmet. they were perfectly safe, and it was just like any other of those tourist flights.
If I had to make a choice between going on board the New Shepard or the Virgin Galactic Spaceship Who. The new one is called the Delta series. I think it's even bigger. I think, I struggle. I believe in space planes. And ballistic trajectory, great.
Hmm.
And yes, there's some reuse in, there's 100% reuse in the New Shepard system. Whereas, going up in a plane underneath a lifting aircraft, a mothership, and then releasing you, that's pure Thunderbirds. That, here we are, back to UFO again. That's the lunar shuttle in Thunderbirds, right? And then accelerating from there, like an X-15.
That is pretty cool, yeah.
And then that beautiful piece of technology, that folding wing, which allows it to feather and reduce its velocity very efficiently. I think that's a superb bit of kit, but slightly more likely to go wrong.
Well, I would assume at this point it's safe. They famously had that tragic testing accident that killed two test pilots, which was, as I recall, a result of, well, a combination of design and operator error. Essentially, the design made it rather too easy to do what somebody did, which was to pull a lever at the wrong time.
Yeah, there was nothing to stop that from happening. There was no fail-safe, if you like. Yeah, and they put that in and repaired it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a piece of technology. I built a model of it. I bought a polystyrene or a styrofoam, other foams are available, free-flight glider, and completely remodeled it and even built the articulated wing. I only threw this out when I left Dinnover Road, but I was quite proud of that. And it actually fly as well. I got the sense of gravity right. It flew.
It's a very cool design.
Yeah, I'm just envious of Katy Perry and those other people, whoever they were. That's all it is.
Of course. Yeah, are we all?
Yeah.
Lucky then.
Envy is a terrible thing.
Hello, good evening, America. This is Walter Cronkite. I have had the privilege of covering some of the greatest events in space history for live television. I witnessed Alan Shepard's first flight. I was there when Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. Today is another first. The first all-female space mission since Valentina Tereshkova's pioneering flight on her own in 1963. As you join us live now, I can see the RSS Carbon Line capsule returning from its brief trip up to the height of 346,000 feet. It's carrying six celebrities, performers, rocket scientists, a philanthropist, and a singer. As it descends through the clouds, any moment now we expect the drogue chutes to open. Oh, a surprising amount of screaming there from the crew in the capsule. And now the main chute. And finally, as the capsule gracefully descends on its three parachutes, the retro thrusters will fire, ensuring a soft landing for the crew. That's one small step for a woman, one giant leap backwards for feminism.
Derek Jones, me!
Hey, listen, while we got 10 minutes spare, should we talk about the Formula One? That's what Sarah always used to call
it. The Formula One.
You've been watching the Formula One
there. The Formula One.
I gave her an American accent. She doesn't have an American accent. She's Australian. Yeah. You watch the Formula One. It's right. Yeah. Right, well, should we start with Australians? Piastri. He's in good form, isn't he?
He's looking spectacular. I mean, from the start of the season when Norris was favourite for the championship, in the last two races, Piastri has looked the stronger of the two McLaren drivers, frankly. And that drive in Bahrain was just faultless. Yeah, he didn't put a foot wrong, won the race, obviously. Norris did pretty well to come back from his penalty, from being out of position on the grid. Yeah, to finish third was decent. Yeah, but Piastri is looking the better of those two drivers. And we've talked before about how Piastri is a calmer driver. He doesn't seem to have the...
No dramas.
No dramas. Doesn't have the variability that Norris can have from time to time. And Norris, I mean, you know, to his credit, as you know, I think he said this weekend that he felt he wasn't quite there. He, you know, he knew he wasn't performing as he could. And I think this is a mental thing as much as anything. But yeah, it was Piastri's weekend and he's a serious title contender now. It certainly doesn't look like McLaren are going to be, you know, definitely favouring Norris from here on in. They've got two drivers who are going to be fighting for the Drivers' Championship.
If you look at the stats, I'm not a big sports stat man. I'm more interested in the backstory, but I was trying to get a measure of the comparison between teammates at the moment. Of the four races that we've had and one sprint so far, Lando's beaten Oscar twice and Oscar's beaten Lando twice. Of the sprints, there's only been one, and Piastri finished ahead of Norris. At Ferrari, Charles has got ahead of Lewis three times, and Lewis has got one sprint win against nothing for Charles. So, you know, Leclerc is ahead of Lewis, clearly. I want to discuss this.
Yeah.
Will, in your view, do you think he will ever be able to match Leclerc's ultimate speed over a single lap?
I'm not sure. I think he can definitely outrace Leclerc.
True.
He does still need to improve in that car and in that team, in that environment. And I think we saw this weekend that he's done that. He is, you know, he's making steps forward. He himself said that he's coming to a better understanding of how to drive the car. And, you know, they were fourth and fifth, which is, that I think that's pretty good. You know,
it is.
You know, of course, they'd want a better result, but that is a pretty good result for Ferrari right now. They want to, you know, carry on taking steps forward. But fourth and fifth isn't bad. That's pretty good. I think, you know, Lewis is probably past his best, but he's still got tremendous speed and racecraft, and I think. I think he can outrace Leclerc, but he needs to get better in that car.
I think a lot of this at the moment is a bit of a lottery, because time and time again, teams seem to turn up at a circuit and go, well, we can't seem to get the car to work here. And other teams, for instance, Alpine, who are said to be hopeless, suddenly have a car which is capable of top five or top three in qualifying, swing top five. It was extraordinary. And they are still struggling to really grasp this type of F1 car, aren't they? They all have a sweet spot. Some are slightly broader than others, and the narrower the sweet spot, the higher the ultimate speed of the car, but the more difficult it is to get there. Lewis admitted that he hadn't done as good a job. He made a mistake on his qualifying lap. He qualified, what was it, 10th or 9th, and Leclerc was 3rd. I mean,
I think Lewis was 9th, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was
9th. Yeah. Plus or minus one or two spaces from my memory. So, you know, there is speed in that car. And there was some talk from Maranello. Oh, there's so much gossip about Maranello. It's hilarious. There was some talk that Leclerc has decided to go his own way on car setup and not to listen to what Lewis is doing, because I can make it work. I'm going to do that. No matter what Lewis is saying, no, I'm going to do that. No matter what it is, no, I'm doing that. It seems to be working for him at the moment. But it's great. It's a soap opera.
You mentioned Alpine. Yeah, it's great to see that Alpine had a good weekend, and Gasly was what, 7th? Yeah, that's tremendous for them, I think.
Yeah, he's beaten Jack Doohan 3-1.
Yeah.
In terms of who finished ahead of who.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, I think, you know, you'd expect that, you know, Doohan. I think you'd expect that.
And he finished ahead of him in the sprints as well.
It is interesting that Red Bull are having the difficulty that they seem to be having right now in getting speed out of the car. And a crisis meeting, apparently, to try and get to the bottom of what's wrong and what they can do about it. What do you make of that? I mean, aren't you always trying to make your car quicker and do the maximum you can? What is having a crisis?
Do whatever you can to make it.
I mean,
yeah, it's just the backstory, isn't it? We like to exaggerate, but they are suffering, like all the other teams, from what I just described, as a car that's unpredictable and hard to manage. That, you know, sometimes it's a rocket ship, and then sometimes you barely get it round a lap without, you know, a driver being sacked for failing to do that. Which brings me to Max Verstappen at Red Bollocks, right, that's what I'm going to call him. When he was racing against Liam Lawson, finished ahead of him twice. When he was racing against Tsunoda, finished ahead of him twice. And in the sprints, finished ahead of Liam Lawson and
although Tsunoda.
That's Max, right?
That's just Max. But credit to Tsunoda, he had a good weekend. He was what, just three places back from Max? Yeah, he's got to be pretty happy with that in that tricky Red Bull. I think that's as much as Red Bull could have expected of him.
I think you're right, yeah. He's great. There's no doubt he's quick and crazy. He can do it. You know, he has got incredible top speed, I think. But just lightly out of control. That's how I see him. Just on the edge of out of control, which is probably a good thing. As long as you're on the right edge.
Well, he's reined it back. I think he's got a handle on that tendency he had to just be a little bit too far on the
crazy side,
on the ragged edge of things, and on the crazy side, and he's learnt to throttle back on that just enough.
Thrilled to see Luca de Montezemolo at the Bahrain Grand Prix, and he said two things. He said, "Oh, it's wonderful to have Lewis at Ferrari. It's wonderful, wonderful. The team often needs good leadership." And I thought, "Oh, that's interesting," he says.
Mm.
Then he went on to say, "But Kimi Antonelli, oh, Mercedes signed him. We should have signed him. They took care of him. They developed him like McLaren developed Lewis. We should have had Kimi." Oh!
Interesting. Well, I wouldn't read into that, you know, oh, they shouldn't have signed Lewis or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it does say something about how well Kimi Antonelli's performing and how
solid, isn't he?
See his performances. Yeah, he has. No, he's been terrific. And Russell has definitely stepped up to the role of team leader. He had a great race in Bahrain. You know, he was having so many problems with the car. Was it a display on the steering wheel? Had a problem with the brakes? And he still brought it home in second place.
That's what they pay you for.
Yeah. No, that's a tremendous performance. That's a team leader's performance.
Yes, nicely said.
He stepped up now that Lewis has left the team. Russell's doing a tremendous job. And with Antonelli alongside him, that's a very, very strong lineup. They've got a great driver pairing there.
Yeah.
But then again, really so many of the teams have got very strong driver pairs at the moment. You know, Piastri and Norris, Hamilton and Leclerc, you'd be happy to have any one of those pairs in your race team, I reckon.
Behrman and Ocon. Ollie Behrman, you finished ahead of Ocon in the sprint, otherwise Ocon got him three times in the Grand Prix. Williams, here's an interesting one, Z. Or Atlas and Williams, as I believe they're called now. Alex Albon, 4. Carlos Sainz, 0. In the sprint results, Alex Albon, 1. Carlos Sainz, 0. Bam, bam, bam.
Mm.
He's been clobbered. I mean, he had a better weekend, but apart from the damage, right? But
He does seem to be having a little bit of trouble settling in at Williams, doesn't he? But, let's see how the rest of the season pans out for him.
I've got faith in Sainz. I think he's great.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But just to step back and look at the bigger picture, one thing that's worth reflecting on is that going into the season, we said it was going to be a close season. We're expecting a lot of, a very competitive season, and that really is playing out. You know, every team has scored points, which I don't think was the case at this point in the last year or the season before. And we've got a bunch of different teams filling up the first 8 places in the grids in the last couple of races. It's been nicely mixed up. We are seeing a good competitive season, and after the snooze fest really of Japan, that was a much more
Tense.
That was a much more exciting race where there's a lot more action.
It was evolving constantly, wasn't it?
A lot more passing and reversing. Yeah. That's much more.
I enjoyed it. I like it. It was engaging. And we had a safety car. Hooray for safety cars. Welcome back, the safety car.
Yep. For a little bit of debris on the track.
It always helps the race.
I was a little bit surprised when they brought that out. But throws another little factor in there for the teams and drivers to deal with. It gives you a chance to, you know, get lucky with a pit stop, as some people did, or maybe make a bad tyre choice.
We haven't done Aston Martin, we'll do them quickly. We haven't done Sauber, we did Haas, and we haven't done the Racing Bulls. Too complex, because four drivers, right? Aston Martin, Fernando Alonso, 2. Lance Stroll, 2. In the sprint, Fernando Alonso, 0. Lance Stroll, 1. So Stroll had a better sprint than Alonso, but otherwise, you know, Alonso's had a fairly miserable season. He must have done to be able to be matched by Lance Stroll.
Yeah, fair comment.
Excuse me.
But that said, you know, Stroll isn't as bad as
he's
he's sometimes made out to be. You know, true. He is a decent driver, but he's alongside an extraordinary driver in Alonso. But I think, you know, but they're both frustrated with that car this year, as I'm sure the team is. I'm sure they wanted a better car this year and they haven't got it.
Don't worry, Adrian Newey will produce a complicated car for them next year.
Let's hope so.
And it'll take 2 years to sort, yeah. Right, Sauber, Gabriel Bortoleto, 2. Nico Hülkenberg, 2. In the sprint, Gabriel Bortoleto, 1. Nico Hülkenberg, 0. So, Bortoleto arguably has the edge in terms of results over Nico or Nico Hulk there. Don't say anything. I'm pointing. Don't.
No, okay, all right. All right, I'll zip it. I'll No,
you, the truth is you don't have to say it, Zug. It's okay. And that's it, apart from the poor unfortunate people at Racing Bulls. So, my predictions. Here we go into the weekend, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. And I quick glance at how it went last year. And last year, Ollie Bearman was depping for Carlos Sainz, who had an appendicitis, an appendectomy. And Ollie Bearman finished 7th on his debut in the Ferrari, which was amazing.
Mm.
And last year, Hulk finished 10th in the Haas. So I'll be watching those two and hoping that Bearman and Hulk both do better than you might expect next race.
I think that's a fine aspiration. I feel very strongly that you will be disappointed. That's my prediction for the Saudi Grand Prix. Disappointment for Gareth Jones.
There's an expression here in North Wales. There are two towns next to each other. One is called Caergwrle and the other one is called Hope. And the expression around here is that you live in hope but die in Caergwrle.
Okay.
So I live in hope.
That's pretty good. I like it.
Say goodbye, Zog.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. See you in a fortnight for more Gareth Jones on Speed.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang. Gareth Jones!